Excuse me, this is the operator. This call is now being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Please go ahead. Your lines are open.
Thanks very much. Well, good day, everyone, and welcome to this week's Zone File Access Advisory Group call. I'm going to jump right into the role and read off the folks that are on that are dialed into the conference bridge. And if I miss anyone at the end, please let me know. If perhaps folks are sharing a line on your end, I see John McCormick, Mark McFadden is here, Rod Rasmussen, Dave Piscatello, Nacho Amados, Vladimir Shadrinov, Susan Prosser, Francisco Arias, Kurt Pritz, Jonathan Frakes, John Levine, Barry Cobb, Joe Saint-Sauve, Brian Cute, and Rick Wilhelm. Anyone that's sharing a line that I missed this morning? Hearing none, we will move on to the agenda, and today's session is going to be led by Rod Rasmussen. I did want to tend to one quick housekeeping point before we get started, and that is at the onset of the group, we had committed to publishing for public comment a draft concept paper, and the deadline for that publication is just around the corner. In fact, our commitment is to have that published by February 22nd, which is a week from Monday. So we've got this week's call and next week's call to fine-tune the concept paper as well as we can and to determine with some of the agenda items today to determine what exactly we feel we need to include in that and what Mark will need to do after next week's call is really quickly turn around the next version of the draft concept paper, circulate it to the group, and we'll need to get everyone's feedback within a day or two so we can finalize the next version and then get it posted by February 22nd. So and I'm hearing a lot of static in the background, too, so if you're not speaking, if you can mute your phone, that would be great.
This is Kurt. So the posting deadline is really Monday, so we made arrangements to the 15th. So have we made arrangements for a late posting?
We didn't make arrangements for anything. We had always kind of counted back 3 weeks from the start of the meeting and got to February 22nd. I think we can talk about it, but I don't know that either the paper is not going to be as advanced as we would like, or we could talk about having a late posting. Where does the February 15th date come from?
I think that's 3 weeks before. Is the meeting start for March 6th?
I think it's the 8th. It was like the official first start date. Why don't we figure that out and see what we can do sooner?
Well, if we can publish an initial draft after this meeting and start circulating it, then we can make the call on whether it's if enough content will be added in the, makes it worthwhile to, go through the pain of publishing late, then we'll publish late. So we can kind of make that decision as we go, as we look at the quality of the content.
Okay. Well, why don't we get through today's call and augment the paper, out of today's discussion, and then we can move forward with the decision on posting, on the 5th, by the 15th. So, Rod, I'm gonna turn the call and the agenda over to you.
Okay, thank you, Craig, and my apologies in advance. I've got come down with a pretty nasty cold here in the last day and a half. So, and I'm not even on the East Coast where I have an excuse. It's actually been pretty warm out here in the West. I will be in transit for a good chunk of this, but we'll make it through. So we have several things we talked about last week that we wanted to try and get some comments from on the list and then get through today. And the first part of that was taking a look at the cost model and the thing that Mikey put together for us. And there were a few comments on the list. I wanted to get people's input at this point on you know, what was put out there. A couple of different people made comments on various aspects of the cost model. Was there any more feedback on that, and were there any other ideas, et cetera, that we need to incorporate on that before we sew that up?
This is Dave Piscatello.
Go ahead, Dave.
Well, one of the things that was posted late, later either yesterday or the day before, was a question of some of the operational costs and support. I think it was Tom Barrett. Is Tom on the call?
I did not see Tom on the call.
I had started an email thread, and there had been a thread earlier that I contributed to where we talked about capital inventory and the cost of support and the cost of running a customer care or troubleshooting capability. I don't know how Mike had actually factored that into his spreadsheet, if he did. So if it's there, I'd like an explanation. If it's not, I think it's one of the issues we'd have to consider.
And I think Dave, and looking at that, and you're dead on. It is, as far as running an entity that's going to provide this kind of support, and he had some excellent points in his post. You have to consider all those things. I think that Mike's model was much more simplified than that, and looking at things kind of from a, how much manpower does it take to do the actual functionality, and you got to take a look at the currently where we have a model where each consumer is spending a little bit of time. There's nothing dedicated necessarily to doing this, and on the registry side, it's not necessarily a dedicated functionality. It's just part of somebody else's responsibility. So you don't have kind of those overhead factors built in that you'd have to put into a model where you would have that centralized access. And so you can almost take, there's two analyses there, right? You've got the, here's what the cost is to, the ecosystem versus here's what it's going to cost to run a separate entity into itself. And I think that we need to make sure because we're doing an analysis as to what's the benefit and costs overall to the ecosystem, and then what's the, if we're going to stand something up, what's it going to cost to run that? And those are two kind of separate questions, I think. So we may need to take a look at modeling the cost model for running some sort of a access provider as a separate issue, with those other costs in mind, of course. That was my two cents on that.
I think you're absolutely right, and I'm not questioning the value of what Mike produced. I'm just wondering whether it's worth separating out the discussion of cost into sort of a second order paper, as opposed to trying to put something together that I think only has one model and one perspective, and incorporating that into the current draft, especially if we're going to be trying to hasten or accelerate our delivery of that to Monday.
Yeah, I think that makes some sense. And really, the model that is put together right now is really about economic impacts overall, and as a kind of an explanation as to why we're looking at this in the first place. And so I think that's proper to have in there, because people are asking the question, why are we even considering this? And so you need to look at economic impacts just overall. And then as far as models go, maybe have a rough outline, but that, that kind of modeling work can come as part of the actual discussion as to, well, which one of these would we want to run, or what would the community want to choose to do.
Right. And I think that it would also be worthwhile, hopefully, if you know, in some of the proxy kind of scenarios, there are already outsourcing providers that do that sort of thing on a per customer basis, and it might be worthwhile trying to see what their business models are and what their monthly fees are to do something like that, to kind of get a sense of what it might cost if we were to if the community were to say, this is a really good idea. It's not something we want to stand up our own entity to do. And here are some examples of outsourcing that could probably handle a problem for us.
Well, that would certainly give you an idea of how much it would cost too. Just because you can factor in a profitability and kind of get a rough estimate for how much it would cost you to actually put one up too.
Yep. That's all I had to say on this point. Thank you.
All right. Any other thoughts or ideas on the cost model and where we're at with that?
This is John Levine. I like the model. One thing that's not too clear from it is who's expected to pay what. And I'm not sure we can squeeze all that in by Monday, but that is a fairly significant issue. For example, a clearinghouse paid for by ZFA users who wanted something more than the default would be something where, the price would be whatever it was. We didn't have to worry about it, whereas one provided by ICANN or that's mandatory, we do have to worry about.
Hey, this is Jonathan. I have just one thought. As far as if there were a cost to the consumer on this, it seems to me that my experience is there's at least two different types of consumers. Those that would maybe use it once or occasionally, and one that would use it constantly, daily. It might be sort of a tiers of access in this case.
Right, and I think what we're actually getting to, this is really covered on agenda item 5 for the day, is the funding mechanism. Because I started a thread on that, and don't know if anybody chimed in on that on the email yet, but we're trying to just get kind of overall model stuff here, in lieu of, in a vacuum of how you fund it, and then we'll talk about some funding options as a separate issue. I think that was our intent here. The agenda is still the same, right?
Right.
We didn't make a change in that.
No.
Bob, this is Dave again. I did see your list, and I think one reason I didn't comment was because I felt that the set of alternatives that you had actually offered was about as complete as we could think about right now. And the one recommendation we might have is to say, we're developing these two cost models, and then the notion of how it would be paid for is also something that's under study. And here are a number of potential alternatives to funding this effort paying for this effort that will be studied over the next period, and maybe that would go into the paper.
Yeah, that's kind of skipping ahead, but yeah, I think you're right. But I think Jonathan raises a great point: is that you've got different kinds of consumers and needs that we need to identify. And I'm not sure if there's any real data behind how much people actually access things, who's a heavy user versus a low user and the like. That would be interesting, but something we could probably find out as part of the process for determining how you might want to fund this thing.
Right. Well, you had made in your set of models, and I think it's valid. It's hard to – the heaviest users are also the ones who are doing the most work to prevent harm and to essentially reduce collateral costs resulting from phishing or other forms of malicious registrations. You don't want to penalize those people because their business is based on having that information on a regular basis.
That's that's a man after my own heart.
Yeah, you get a hearty amen on that. You know, it would seem like there could be, I don't want to propose models or anything, but perhaps there could be a per-use versus all-you-can-eat type of model for this.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of. And especially if you keep the per-use reasonable enough where we're not preventing the occasional academic endeavor, and perhaps there's even a forgiveness kind of arrangement where if you're doing something, that is, academic and research, you don't have to pay that per use. I think some sort of tiered payment model has to exist that recognizes the different applications of the data and the different frequencies. So there's two dimensions, not just one.
Yeah, I completely agree with that.
Okay, well, I think we've got a pretty good amount of item 5 covered now. Just laughing about that because it actually is tied together to this discussion anyway. You're talking about models. Funding is a natural question. But I want to get back to kind of closing out. If there's any more inputs onto this particular model scheme that we've got, been a couple of proposals out there about how to refine modeling the costs based on various aspects that people have to go through at different times during the process, whether it's startup versus continuing operations, et cetera. I was going to work with Mike. My plan, at least, was to work with Mikey on refining the spreadsheet to accommodate those and kind of call it good unless there were some other inputs that other people had as on that side of it. Okay. Not hearing anything else. Obviously, the list is still open there, too, for comments. Craig, I had to shut up or close my laptop up. What was there was a second part of this first number 2 item agenda. What was it? Could you remind me of what that was again?
What material should appear in the concept paper?
Right. So the question here is how much of the model do we want to actually publish within the paper and how to do it? And I think the straw man we have for that was explanatory text and maybe a top-end table within the paper, and then an appendix that showed the kind of the full model. Am I remembering that correctly?
Yeah, I think that sounds right. You know, the challenge here is that we're very heavy on content around consumer costs, or with Mikey's model, but not a lot of input on provider costs other than from Neustar. So, you know, how that gets balanced in the paper, you know, I think we're going to need to, think about that and be sensitive to it.
So is it possible for us to identify in the paper that, that at this time we've collected more information on consumer costs and the next version of the draft will actually, we'll attempt to have, additional information regarding provider costs. I think anytime we have to deliver something that is not completely baked, it's always useful to just say that up front and be honest and say, this is just not something we were able to collect data for yet.
Yeah, this is Brian Cute from Affilius, and I've been pushing my guys hard this week. They've been pulling together costs, and I apologize for not having them available. We did have some activity last week with regard to excessive downloads from two different sources that we were tracking down, and that actually did impact in terms of our bandwidth cost variable. I do hope to have that into the group this week, pushing hard to make that happen. That being said, I think I agree with the points just made. I think whatever we put out there, we need to be clear and qualify exactly what we have for costs from providers in that aspect of the cost model. And I would also agree with the earlier comments that if we haven't been able to fully break out costs of the different models in terms of how those are distributed across the users and across the providers, whether it's a new centralized. We need to be clear about putting that disclaimer in as well.
I agree.
Right. Yep. Sounds good. And if we can get anything from you, even just rough estimate stuff, that would be really helpful, I think, at this stage for the paper. So just strong encouragement for you guys. thanks again for taking the effort, though. I appreciate that. I think what we want to do, too, is make sure to separate out kind of the economic model slash how it works, how each model works from the how are we going to actually, you know, raise the capital or whatever it's going to take to run it, so that we can, you know, come up with a model that makes the most sense. And you know, funding ticket is tied to that in some way, but you know, if you could kind of separate out the two, I think you can make some progress on deciding what works well versus, you know, how things work from a political perspective on paying for it. Any other input on this part of the agenda here? Okay, so I'm going to take and we'll see if we can get some more information here from Phileas and maybe some of the other registries. We'll hope for that, but in the meantime, we'll do some tweaks to the spreadsheet. As that were suggested, and get that done before the end of the week here, hopefully, and so we can incorporate some tables, et cetera, and we'll get whatever we come up with as far as model changes we'll put out to the group for some quick comments, too, and then we can get those assumptions at least as they stand into the paper. Craig, could you remind me of the next topic area?
Yeah, the next agenda item is draft two of the concept paper, talking about the elevator pitches, the spreadsheet columns, just overall level of satisfaction. Have we captured the information correctly, and is it presented the way, you know, the way we would like to see it in the paper? So, yeah, Mark's first item is, you know, are the elevator pitches of the three models accurately captured? And if I can scroll down to them in the concept paper. Mark, do you recall offhand what page these are on?
They start at the bottom of page 11.
Okay.
Right there.
Thanks. And so this has been put out. I'm sorry, I heard someone chiming in. So the Mark has put out on the list a call for input to the language in these models. I think a few of us have provided comments directly back to Mark, but are there folks who are on the call today who have input to this? I see Barry Cobb has his hand raised. Barry, do you want to chime in?
May I jump on the queue?
For some reason, maybe Barry is muted for the moment. When he comes back on, we'll add him to the queue. Vladimir, why don't you go ahead?
Yeah, I had a note about the description of the proxy model. I wonder where if caching is really appropriate here, because doesn't caching turn it into the repository model, actually?
This is Dave Piscatello. I actually rewrote the proxy model to explain the difference between persistent and ephemeral store. So I'd sent Mark both a description of the repository model that was a little bit more fleshed out and a description of the proxy model. And the idea is that, you know, in the same way that a a resolver in the name, the DNS can cache, and that information is not authoritative. When you have a proxy that caches in the general sense for an application, you have data that are locally stored, but only for a specific performance or other application, such as the ability to take the entire data and then perform some sort of filtering or analysis. And I tried to explain the difference in the versions I sent to Mark.
So, in my opinion, the dividing line between these models is whether consumers access the authoritative file, I mean the file that is published by the registry, or they access the copy of that file. And the principal difference is not only whether the data is authoritative or not, but also if the registry is able to shut down access for a particular user. And whereas I'm not sure whether if we take the proxy model with caching, there is room for a registry to revoke the right of access to a particular user. So I'm still not convinced whether we need to comment on caching in the proxy model.
So the way that this is Dave again. The way that works today in something like an SSL VPN is that the access control list, or that's maintained by the SSL security gateway, is simply flips the access from permit to deny for that user for that file. And so once he's flipped that, whether the file is available in cache or the file is at rest at the registry, it's immaterial. The customer is turned off for that access to that registry.
So we did this a lot in
building SSL VPNs for large companies that had large extranet customer base. OECD as an example. The granularity was down to specific reports within specific disciplines.
So again, can you confirm that you think the it is feasible in any centralized model to regulate access on the level of access of a specific user to a specific file?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Yeah, this is Rod. I think that that question came up from some registry input as well, as the ability to turn off a particular user at a particular time. And I think regardless of the model, we want to make sure that capability is done at least on an administrative level, if not a technical level, so that the registry still can maintain, control of for a particular potential abusive user of their registry that they want to shut down or shut out.
And once we make it a requirement, then the zone file access provider, would have to be able to assure that requirement was satisfied. And the technical details that I just ran through I wanted to offer just as an example of how it's been done before. Yeah.
Right. So I think that's an important concept for us to capture here in this paper, is that the registry, the part of the way that if you have a centralized model that would provide a way for registries to enforce their individual rights to limit access based on at least a set criteria. We get Barry.
Barry, did you wish to speak? Apparently not at the moment.
So there was some input given to Mark directly, it sounds like. I haven't seen anything else put out on the list in comments on this. are those inputs something that needs to be synthesized and put back out to the list?
Yeah, this is Mark. I think as far as comments that I got directly, I got comments from Dave, and I actually got a couple comments from Craig as well. And I think what we need to do is the comments I got from Dave sort of went beyond kind of an elevator pitch and more to sort of a technical explanation. And I think what we should do here is have some in that section. In fact, for the people who are on Adobe Connect, you can actually see it there. I think there has to perhaps be some revisions to 7.1.3, which is the very short descriptions of each one of the models. But I also think there's a place for Dave's descriptions as well that are more technical. And what I'd like to do there is have one last chance to sort of incorporate some of the suggestions we've had on the call here about being clear about the role of caching, the implications of access control, and so forth. So I guess what I'm suggesting here, Rod, is that we continue to keep the sort of elevator pitches pretty short in fairly non-technical English, but also incorporate somewhere Dave's more detailed sort of view of each one of the models. At least that's my suggestion.
As long as you keep consistent. I think that's fine.
Pull it back off for six.
I think we had two people talking at once. I heard Dave. Who else was wanting to say something there? Okay, can you repeat what you said, Dave, and then perhaps whoever else was talking to can chime in afterwards.
Yeah, I'm getting a bit of echo when I talk. I said that I think it's fine to have having the elevator pitch a second more deep technical analysis, and I'll be happy to do a consistency check between the two.
Okay. Was there anybody else? Okay. So I from the lack of dissenting views on the elevator pitches, I think, and they look pretty good from my thought process, at least. The concept of having those in there is sound, that we can get those, something that probably can go right to the executive summary when it comes to that. I think with that, your plan sounds good to me there, Mark.
Okay, what I'll do is I'll make sure that this section, I'll break it out once again and send it as an individual part to the list so that you can see anything that I've revised.
Okay, that sounds good. And anybody who's got any last-minute tweaks or suggestions on that, make sure to read through those and get comments out there so we can actually get that feedback and incorporate that as appropriate. Craig, could you remind me of the next bit that we wanted to talk about?
Yeah, item 3.2 is the group satisfied with the current spreadsheet columns? And I'm not sure, Mark, does this refer to the columns on page 14 and 15?
Yeah, that's right, Craig. And I'm sorry about the word columns, there is an error. What I'm really interested in is a couple weeks ago, the group had worked pretty hard on these comparison of the models, and what I'd like to do is get some closure on what the content of that spreadsheet is. It goes over two pages. It's for the people who are not on the Adobe Connect. It's on pages 14 and 15. For the people who were looking at the individual documents, it's section 7.2. And really what I'm looking for here is closure on the issue of, are we satisfied with the content of that spreadsheet and the description of the differences between the models?
And did you receive any comments at all from the posting?
So there were no comments on the list, and I received one comment about this directly.
Okay. Did anybody have any additions, subtractions, changes, thoughts, et cetera, on this?
This is Dave. I think you have to accept that when you're going to try to put a very short phrase to describe something significantly larger, that you aren't going to get it exactly right. And to the extent that it's right enough, I'm satisfied with the way the table, is presented.
Yeah, that was kind of my thought, too. I guess the question at this point, is there anything, and we'll have to keep this in mind for the rest of the conversation, if there's anything that we've talked about today that would make any substantive difference to that spreadsheet that we want to include there. The one thing I can think of that we just talked about might be that, a specific mention that registries would be able to control access to limit to individual subscribers. The reason I'm thinking about this from this perspective is that because of the length of the paper and the length of time people have to look at it, somebody may very well just look through this kind of summary section for the highlights and go from that. And if there's an important point in there that people are sticking on as far as an objection to any particular model, it would be good to make sure that whatever that objection point is covered in the spreadsheet.
Right. If I could make an observation, though, I might be wrong here, but I think the intent here is that it would be true for all the models that the registries would have the ability to control access to the data. So there wouldn't be any, you wouldn't be showing any difference between any of the models that's on the spreadsheet.
Oh, good point. Good point.
We can actually include this up in the section of registry concerns. And one of the concerns is to make certain that that the registry has the opportunity to control who accesses, the zone data, and it should just be listed in the list in the earlier section. So you have two sections that's like consumer burdens and provider burdens, and one of the provider burdens is to essentially monitor who has access to zone data.
This is Brian. I'd concur with that.
This is Jonathan. Go ahead, Vladimir.
I heard Jonathan wanting to speak up. Who else would like to be added to the queue? Yeah, Jonathan.
I parrot what Brian said. As a registry provider, potential registry provider, I think it'll be important to be able to have some ability to identify or add or restrict access. I have taken, I have the privilege of being ICANN accredited registrar, and I have taken some screenshots from the RADAR system, which is a sort of a extranet management system that exists for registrars. And I've taken some screenshots of it that I'm putting into a diagram. I was hoping to maybe I'll send a presentation to the list, but I'd like to have some time in Nairobi in our session to present this idea of how such a system could work. There's something that we currently have called RADAR that might be leveraged for this, and how it could be used to give sort of a veto power or approval power to the registries so that they're included in the process of, who's blessed or not to get these zones on a registry-by-registry basis.
Jonathan, do you intend to circulate anything to the list before Nairobi, or are you just looking for some time to dedicate to that in Nairobi?
I'm trying to actually have that by the close of the week.
Okay.
So, well, so I would like, if we could, include it with materials we're going to submit. I don't think it's necessary for publication for the Nairobi meeting so much.
Right.
But I'd like to socialize it within the group.
Okay.
But what I was hoping is, you know, it's a PowerPoint deck, maybe 8 slides, and I'll vet that with the group before Nairobi.
Okay. Well, we'll look forward on the list to getting that from you, and then talk about the most appropriate way to present that during the session in Nairobi. So if we, jumping in here, if we look at the next item on the agenda under the concept paper, is the ZFA model pros and cons sections complete and accurate? And just as Mark was soliciting input on the columns or the rows within the model descriptions, on page 16 are these the pros and cons, and, you know, Have we adequately, at least for this stage of development of concept paper, captured the information that we want to present?
This is Dave Piscitello again. I sent Rod a sort of spreadsheet. One of the things that I noticed in trying to understand the quality and the accuracy of the elevator pitches was that I couldn't quite map whether the alternatives that we were describing actually satisfied or didn't satisfy the consumer burdens and provider burdens. And so I took a cut at making a spreadsheet that essentially grabbed the list of consumer burdens, made columns for each of the alternatives, and tried to understand whether or not the consumer burden was addressed. And I sent that to Rod. I meant to send it to the entire list, so I'll be happy to do that after the call. And I just took a first stab at checking things off. And I don't know whether that's a useful thing to include at this point, or whether we just want to discuss that internally to use to tighten up the language we have later. But I'll be happy to share that, upon completion of the call. And then if you think it's worthwhile, I'll try to generate a similar one for the provider burdens.
Yeah, I think that would be useful to circulate to the list. And I think that the idea of using that to tighten up this spreadsheet is probably the best way to go without, it's an internal checklist, so to speak. We could certainly think about putting, if there's, interest in it, we could put it in an appendix or something like that in a later draft. But I don't know that we need it for this current level of development.
That's fine.
And Dave, could you remind me of when you sent that to me? Because I'm not finding that one.
6:07 p.m. Eastern Time, February 9th.
Thanks. I'll take a look for that.
Subject line is comparison of consumer burdens.
Yeah, this is Brian. Just to be clear, we're operating off the same chart. There was one mark you sent on the 8th at 1:38 and then 2:17. They were slightly different. Can you just give me the background on the differences? I think the one we're looking at on the screenshot is the earlier of the two, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Sorry, this is Mark. I wasn't aware there were differences. If they are, they're very, very small. What I intended to do and what I thought I did was actually just cut Section 7.3 out as a separate document. So I'm surprised. I guess I'm surprised to hear that there were differences.
Right.
Because what I thought it.
Brian, is there something, is there a specific difference that you can call out that we can address real quickly?
No. My error. I was just flipping between documents here. I was looking at 7.2. Pardon me. My error.
Okay. And I guess I admit to being guilty to, and this is Craig, sending some comments that I've had directly to Mark. I should really be circulating them to the list. More often than not, they're editorial more than they are content, which is why I've been doing that. But I'll make a habit of sending to the entire list rather than just to Mark directly. We had a very quiet group today.
Either snowed under or literally or figuratively.
Yeah, that's there. You're right, Rob.
Okay. Well, I think that, given we've had this out in the list and we've been chatting about it for a couple of weeks now, that we've got, for the purpose of getting a paper out there, we're not getting down to multiple levels of edits with fine tooth comb and the whole bit, but we've got I think something pretty solid. So I think we're probably good with incorporating whatever we come up with today and to go ahead with that. And then the next I have my list open here, Craig. So.
Okay.
Let's see, the next part here was talking about, is the new material about research use of the zone file sufficient? And so that's an open question.
So this is Mark again. I did get a contribution on this, and so in the next version, we will have a sort of expanded paragraph on research use of zone file data. This is a place where we actually got some constructive text.
Okay, was that on the list, or did that go straight to you?
I think that was on the list.
Okay, I'll take another look at that.
I don't recall seeing it, Mark, so if you think it was on the list, will you circulate it back around, or whoever the originator was, if they could resend it, that would be great.
Happy. I'm online. I'll do that right now.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, and I had meant to actually contribute to that one, and I'd forgotten to. I'll also pull something to the list on that here today, as far as things that we do, and I know that other organizations within our community do with this kind of material. Okay, well, then the last bit on this was how should the cost model be incorporated in the document? And I think that really gets back to it's kind of similar to the last item, last part of item two, which is how do we put the modeling work we put together. Am I wrong there, Mark, or is that that really kind of just talking about the same thing?
Yeah, it is talking about the same thing, and I'm pretty comfortable with where we stand. Mikey has been sort of helping me come up with some text here, and so I'm pretty comfortable with what we've agreed to here, where we have a copy of the model as an appendix, but up front we have some a basic view of the model and also what the implications of the model are.
This is Vladimir. I thought there could be some value in publishing the cost model as an Excel file, because first, if you publish it in a different form, you won't see the formulas. And second, there are some values in the cost model that you can play with.
Is that something that technically it's obviously possible. And from an ICANN publishing papers perspective, I think Latimer's got a great point there. Is there a way we can publish an Excel spreadsheet and have that available as an adjunct to the paper itself?
Yeah. Like you just said, Rod. I mean, you can do anything technically. We just wouldn't need to figure out how to make that happen. Are you talking about publishing it on our ZFA information webpage, or are you actually talking about publishing it along with the concept paper out for public comment?
Well, if the group website is publicly available, if we can, we could just do a reference to it there. If people want to play with it, as long as the public can, you know, who wants to comment, it can download and play with it. That's the real objective here.
Yeah, the information on the webpage is obviously open to everyone, and so publishing or posting something to that page is pretty easy.
Okay, so then in the paper, what we could do is make a reference to that, whatever the final, you know, URL is, to download that, and then put that in the paper. So, you know, for people who want to get the model and work with it, they can directly access it themselves there.
Is there also a plugin or something that would need to be linked to for those who may not have Office? Since it's not really an open format as such.
Good question.
The Open Office version, is that what you're looking for, Joe?
Could be Open Office or could be a plugin. I don't care either way, but just something for folks who may not have it installed. I know most folks do, but some folks, especially in developing parts of the world, may not.
Right. So it sounds like we'd want to publish that in some sort of multiple format. I know people do this all the time, so I will propose that we make that an objective and then figure out how to do that as we get to actually putting it out.
But I'll obviously take that action item to figure out, you know, how to make that happen.
Okay, so I think that pretty much brings us through all of item three. Is there anything else on the draft of the concept paper other than logistics that we need to talk about or that people want to talk about? Okay. If I'm not mistaken, item four got postponed, Craig, is that correct?
Yes, for the benefit of the group, I did get a draft document from Dan Halloran in ICANN General Counsel's office, responding as best they could to the four questions that we posed to them. I had a call with them yesterday. I had a number of questions about their remarks, and we went back and forth, and they produced another draft last night that we'll meet about today. I'll meet with them today to fine tune. And then get something published to the list in the next day or so, and then we could plan to have Dan or a gentleman by the name of Ken Shu, who's also in that office, speak to some of these issues next week. The responses that they provide may actually be adequate in terms of responding to what we've asked, and we may not even find that there's value in doing a call with them. But I think we can hold off on making a decision about that until after we read the paper. So yes, I think agenda item number four. I think we can move on to that.
Okay. Thanks. And so yeah, when we get that input, we can circulate that and see if for four we can circulate that and go from there. So for item five, I put out I started a thread. I hadn't seen any comments either on the list or directly back to me. And I apologize if somebody sent me something overnight. I haven't had a chance to go through all my email this morning yet. Put out there kind of every wild and, well, not just wild, but every kind of standard kind of way you could structure funding and ways you can run some sort of a provider as, you know, different forms of business. I tried to make sure to. I didn't include a couple things which I think would be completely off the table, which would be having a for-profit company run the thing and be charging lots of extra for it that nobody else but them would get a hold of. I thought that would probably be untenable for everybody, so I left that out.
Okay.
So But beyond that, there's different ways of structuring an organization, and then different ways of that organization obtaining the funds they need to run it. I guess my first question were there other options and things that I didn't have in there that people thought should be included? And then the second question follow-up to that is, are things in there that, you know, should, we should just toss out as being too crazy? I'll throw that to the floor.
Hey, this is Jonathan. Just one thought, and I mentioned it at an earlier stage in this, but we do, as part of our mandate, make sure that we are allowing registries to still have some sort of a paid service that they might build around an enhanced product. I'm not sure that I read in this, and I may have missed it, where this, if it were a third-party access or something along those lines, that this platform could be leveraged as a means to reach the audience for these. So, in essence, if there's 40 consumers for a given zone, that the registry would have access to them to somehow distribute whatever enhanced products they might have.
Right. And I think one of the funding options that I mentioned was, if not exactly that, very similar to that, which, and that is the idea that if you could create a model where you are doing value added services that are, you know, being run through this provider, then the registries could get compensation for those value added services. And a portion of those, you know, of the revenue from those value-added services could actually go for paying for the overall cost to run the kind of the basic model, so that you could basically take the value-added services as a way to pay for the basic or free service or whatever, however you want to categorize it. That was one of the concepts I had in there. Does that get to what you're talking about, Jonathan?
Well, I think what I'm failing to articulate, and I could use another cup of coffee, is that you know, perhaps using the system as some form of an access to those enhanced services, similar to how an affiliate program might in the online world, that perhaps that could be an additional means to help fund, if it were a paid service, that could help to defer or offset the costs of operation.
Right, and I think I see what you're talking about, and that is slightly different than the concept I was talking about, where, you know, if you had an aggregator kind of model, you could put out enhanced services from that. But you're talking about is more of a conduit for registries to be able to deliver their various other services that are, you know, that are something that is kind of unique to them, perhaps. But then that becomes a way for a distribution channel, as it were, and then some of the revenue from that can help offset the cost of running that. Is that right?
I'm basically saying that, but I think it works more in the model where we've got a purely neutral facilitator, if it's a third party, that wouldn't have something that would potentially, you know, compete with a current or future service that the registry might offer. So, in essence, if there were a third-party access provider, that was a purely neutral role. And what I'm talking about would be services that it would be enabling the registries directly to be able to offer services via this platform and leveraging such as a way to help fund and finance the operation of this system.
Right, yeah. I think we're talking about the same thing from a couple of different angles. I think that's certainly something that we should put out there as a way of running this. But I look at that as this is a real opportunity for registries to offer some of these services they may not have in the past, especially if one of the considerations for standing up such a service has been the cost of actually, providing the access to the service and running and all that. If we've got a party that's already taking care of all that,
Well, that gets rid of one of those startup costs that may be preventing them from doing that today and actually help their innovation. Just my two cents.
Rick Wilhelm, did you want to chime in here?
This is Rick. So one thing just a quick follow up on that last one. I don't know that you'll find that the registries would think that any of the money involved in it would be big enough to matter to them, because the amounts of dollars that we're ostensibly talking about exchanging hands are probably, you know, fraction, you know, small percentages of a number that really is meaningful. And sort of to that end, one of the things that I didn't see in the list of five was just a small for-profit organization that isn't part of something larger, that is a, you know, couple guys in a garage kind of vibe, and maybe it's started as a consortium by the consortium of the consumers that would contribute initial capital, or maybe have some employees seconded to it or something like that, but is designed as a small operation. And so I didn't see that in the list of five, and I'm wondering if there was a reason regarding that.
Mainly because I didn't think of it. So.
Okay.
Yeah, this is Brian Q. Can I get in the queue?
Go ahead.
Yeah. No, this is an important point. I want to pick up on Jonathan's point. I don't think it was missed, but have we been talking about anything other than a neutral third party if there was to be a centralized entity in any shape or form? And, you know, I think the notion of that party either being in a position to sell value-added services or to be a for-profit entity, I think we're kidding ourselves. If we say we'd set up a for-profit entity that would have access to all this data, that wouldn't at some point in time want to leverage that data to sell additional services. That's just the natural course of affairs. So this is an important point. I've never understood this to be anything other than potentially neutral third party that is just stepping into the role in some capacity of providing access to the zone file data.
Right. Now, you know, I kind of captured that in the models I put there, where I mentioned restrictions on if you had a portion of a for-profit company running this, it would be firewalled and have certain restrictions on what it could actually do with the data because of that very concern. I think there's an opportunity perhaps for such an entity to work with the registries in order to provide, you know, that kind of value-add service. But that would be something that, at least in my opinion, it would have to be worked out between the registries and that entity as far as being able to take advantage of that and not provide, you know, not just, I think we all want to make sure that whoever's got access to this data, if you do some sort of centralized model, wouldn't be able to unfairly profit from it, and basically take their market position or their technical position and be able to turn that into profits in and of just for themselves. And that's always been the intent. You have either something neutral or something that's very controlled in that regard, at least from my perspective.
Yeah, this is Dave Piscitello again. And this is one of the reasons why I keep mentioning, you know, things like, you know, managed security service providers. My vision of this is that it's just somebody who's handling transport and security. It's not somebody who's, you know, building some sort of application. And even the called the value added services like filtering, I view as more similar to content inspection and stripping than you know, doing something really for profit.
Go ahead, Ron. I'd go after you, Ron.
Sorry, I got stuck on mute there. Yeah, I was going to say I understand the concern from the registry side. I have a concern from the consumer side about setting up an entity that has access to all this data, can correlate things, and then can turn around and, you know, decide to sell those and perhaps hurt
people who have created models about using these this information on the consumer side that you know would perhaps you know affect a wide number of those consumers negatively because of that market position. So I think this concern is shared by both consumers and producers of the data. And so I think you're going to get pretty wide support for making sure this is well understood and well controlled as far as how anything is done with the information that's stored there.
I think my point complements that. You know, I do see where some sort of a central access provider could provide a very thin service, perhaps to normalize the data for lighter weight formats or something along those lines. Perhaps, you know, different consumers have different needs. Perhaps, you know, this provider could take and do something simple like make a unique list of the IP addresses, the name servers, or the domain names available as a separate file, to help address some of the concerns that John has raised about access to emerging nations or people with lower bandwidth. But I wouldn't want to see such a provider offer much more than something that simple.
Other than perhaps as a conduit for other services that are being provided by registries.
Precisely. Precisely.
Right. Yeah, I think DNSSEC data is another one that would be interesting to filter, especially in that consideration for emerging nations.
But whatever it is, it would be available to all the registries on the platform, and it would be very simple. Nothing complicated that might interfere with a model that a registry, for example, might develop. And I think you bring up a good point about the use of the data for a provider like this. You know, I think it's important, as Dave mentioned, this is really more of a cyberarian role, a real facilitator type of a role, and not much more than that.
Okay. There's any other feedback on this? I think we've had a couple of great items revealed and that we need to incorporate already. Any other thoughts? All right. I think that was the last main agenda item for today, if I'm not mistaken, Craig, was it?
Yeah, that's right. The entity funding is the last item on the agenda.
All right, so it sounds like we've gotten through. And Mark, did you get there was a couple of main comments there. Did we need to work on how do we want to work on incorporating those in? Do we need to put that on the list, or did you get that so we can just add it to the paper? Where do we want to go with that input that we got?
I think it would be nice for that to have someone generate some text and send it to the list. That'd be really helpful.
Okay, well, I'm going to ask if Rick, could you throw your comment about, you know, kind of the two guys in a garage model or whatever we want to call it,
sure,
on the list, and then Jonathan, could you put your kind of summarize your points there and throw them out there as well?
Glad to. Yes, thank you.
Cool. Thanks, guys. All right. Well, let's get that, and then we can incorporate those comments in along with the kind of the other kind of bullets I mentioned and add that to that section, and I think we should be good to go for at least this round. All right, did we want to talk about the rest of the logistics, et cetera, for the remainder of our call here, Craig?
I'm sorry, Rod, what?
Should we talk about logistics of nuts and bolts of what we're going to do for the next week and how the paper gets buttoned up, et cetera?
Yeah, that's a good idea, and I will. I know that Kirk Fritz had to drop off the line, but I'm going to follow up with him around the publication timing issue, simply because you know the 15th is just two business days away from today, and while I think the concept paper is you know good in the form that it is, there was also a lot of off-list discussion this last weekend, a lot of substantive information from today's call. And the ability to get that incorporated, turned around to the list for comment and feedback, and then revisions,
I think trying to get that all done and feel good about it by Monday feels unrealistic for me.
Yeah, I'd agree. We've been kind of working towards the 22nd as our date, and you know, we just lost whatever 7/9 of our time or whatever it is.
Yeah, and you know, the last mile is always the most challenging. So I will follow up on that, and I'm gonna push for a modified date. You know, in terms of next steps with logistics, you know, I heard you just make a call out to Jonathan and to Rick to shoot some points to the list that Mark can extract and incorporate into the paper. To the notes that Rod circulated earlier in the week, either about the cost models or any of the table and the tables information. If folks could provide whatever final, you know, whatever comments and remarks they have to the list in the next day or so, Mark and I can then work together on you know, finalizing the next version of the draft and getting it turned around back to the list for one final pass before we get it ready for publication. So I still think we could have this, you know, wrapped up towards the end of next week. But it's going to really require that everyone take some time right away to review what's being circulated, provide comment, and you know, that we all just work really diligently and really, really hard to get to this next version. But I think that we're almost there. I think the group really has fulfilled on its commitment to the community around, you know, coming together with some concepts for enhanced zone file access. You know, I would anticipate a fair amount of public comment on this, and certainly lots of healthy dialogue in Nairobi for the folks that will attend. And then following that, we need to, you know, craft out our work timeline through the next version of the applicant guidebook, which I think is due to be published sometime in May in advance of the Brussels meeting. So I think that those are our kind of marching orders to get this out for comment. And then in the weeks following Nairobi and up to publication of the next version of the guidebook to, you know, tweak and more finely define what we have and, you know, move forward with a model or a proposed series of models. And I think that's all that I have on this. You know, Rod and Vladimir, as the co-chairs of the group, is there anything that you wanted to add, or for that matter, anyone who's on the call that wants to chime in as we wind down in the last minute of today's call?
This is Vladimir. Yeah, I would like to add, as we were sitting on this call, I read the news that Afilias has bought .mobi, so our congratulations to Brian Cute.
Thank you very much. That news just went live around 10:30 this morning. Thanks, Vladimir.
Well, here,
all right,
here,
well,
you know,
I was just going to say, now we know where to go to get our zone file access for .mobi.
Right, you are.
I didn't have anything substantive to add. But other than, you know, get your comments in so we can make sure to get those included. Thanks for all the work up to date, and we'll get this cranked out here.
Thanks, everyone.
Have a good day, guys.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you for participating in today's conference call. You may now disconnect.